All rise. The Chief Judge and the Judges of the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, draw near, for the court is now in session. God save the United States and its honorable court.
Please take your seats. The court will come to order. We're here today to hear the argument of United States versus Aaron Basic Trevor Bagley. Both sides ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I understand, Captain Cameron, you want 5 minutes to reserve?
That's correct.
You may proceed.
Chief Judge Orr, Judge Rohn, Judge Harney, may it please the court. Airman Bagley was convicted of violating a guidance memorandum, guidance that was not issued by a general officer in command, guidance that did not comply with the regulations governing Air Force publications, guidance that was not punitive for the purposes of Article 92.1. Your Honors, this court must overturn Airman Bagley's Article 92 conviction for two key independent reasons. First, the guidance memorandum here was not issued by a general officer in command or by his superior, and therefore it is not a punitive general order or regulation. And second, Your Honors, the memorandum is irregular on its face and therefore is undeserving of any presumption of lawfulness. I'd like to discuss both of these independent reasons in more detail. First, Lieutenant General Green was not authorized to issue a punitive general order. The manual for courts martial, as well as binding case law, are both very clear as to who can issue punitive general orders. They are a general court martial convening authority, a general or flag officer in command, or a superior to either. And Your Honors, Lieutenant General Green, as the Surgeon General of the Air Force, does not fall in any of these categories. He is not a general court martial convening authority. Furthermore, he is not a general officer in command. And the reason for that, Your Honors, is because under federal law, a medical officer is not entitled to exercise command because of rank, except over persons placed under his charge. This comes from 10 U.S.C. section 8579. And there's nothing in the record, Your Honors, that would indicate that Airman Bagley was in Lieutenant General Green's chain of command. In fact, the record would suggest otherwise. The government, in its briefs, does not appear to argue that Lieutenant General Green was able to issue a general punitive order standing alone. Instead, the government's argument appears to be that he was directed to do so by the Secretary of the Air Force. This argument fails, however, for a couple of key reasons. First of all, the guidance memorandum itself, and I'd like to discuss this in more detail later in my argument, but the guidance memorandum itself does not bear any indication at all that it was issued by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. The government seems to suggest, however, that there are two separate documents that indicate that Lieutenant General Green was authorized to issue this guidance memorandum and that he did so by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. Essentially, the government points to AFI 33360, and I'll be referring to this publication throughout my argument, but the government points to a provision in this AFI which states that in signing the AF Form 673, the approval authority is also confirming that the information therein is by order of the Secretary of the Air Force or commander/director. That comes from AFI 360, paragraph 1.2.7.1.2. Then what the government does is they point to the AF Form 673 that was signed by Lieutenant General Green in this case. And Your Honors, that form is essentially a staff summary sheet that accompanies a proposed piece of, proposed regulation. And so the government points to the AF Form 673, they point to the AFI that says in signing that AF Form 673, Lieutenant General Green was authorized to issue this guidance memorandum, and then argues that that serves, the interplay between those two documents has the effect of turning the guidance memorandum into a punitive general order. The problem with that argument, Your Honors, is that that very same AFI that the government relies on, 33360, states, as indicated in the blown-up regulation here, that publications that require further supplementation by other publications to give them effect will not be considered punitive for the purpose of Article 92.1 prosecution. And that's exactly what we have here, Your Honors. We have a guidance memorandum that does not have punitive effect unless it's supplemented by both the AF Form 673 and AFI 33360. And that's really critical because what we're talking about here is whether Lieutenant General Green was authorized to issue this guidance memorandum as a punitive general order. And the underlying policy considerations when we're talking about these types of cases is whether an airman is on notice of what is prohibited and what is not. And in looking at the guidance memorandum itself, it would not have been clear to Airman Bagley that this applied to all airmen or that it applied to him. It wouldn't have been clear to him either that it was issued by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. And that's because we don't have anything on the document itself that would indicate that it was issued by order of the Secretary. In turning to the second independent reason why this court should overturn Airman Bagley's conviction, I'd like to refer specifically to the guidance memorandum itself and point out some irregularities on its face. It is well-settled law that the lawfulness of an order is presumed. However, if the order appears irregular on its face, this presumption does not apply. And if the presumption doesn't apply, then the government is required to prove the order's lawfulness. Before I get into some of the particular and specific problems with this guidance memorandum, I do want to address one thing that was noted by the government in its motion to cite supplemental authority. The government suggests that at the time of Airman Bagley's court-martial, the rules that govern punitive publications did not apply to this guidance memorandum. And, Your Honors, that is incorrect. Those rules were in place all but one. Those rules were not affected at all by the interim change to the AFI. What that interim change did was simply clarify that those rules applied to guidance memoranda that were intended to be enforced under Article 92.1. Here, there's no question the government has treated this guidance memorandum as a punitive regulation, and they've done so from day one. And so there should be no question that if the government is arguing and trying to enforce a publication under Article 92.1 as a punitive regulation, that the government has to follow its own rules that govern the requirements of a punitive regulation. And to assist the court in looking at this guidance memorandum, I'd like to briefly swap out my demonstrative aid.
Okay.
Make sure I'm following here. I mean, you do have Air Force instruction 33360. I think it's the same paragraph you've decided, 12712.
Yes, sir.
The approval authority is also confirming that the information there is by order of the SECAF or commander as a cook. So are we not to give any credence to the fact that we assume regularity and that we would have there's no guidance, no reason to believe that a three-star general would sign a form that he did not feel was appropriate. I guess that's kind of one of the concerns I've got here. It seems like they followed the guidance for establishing a regulation. He signed there indicating this was only being done on behalf of the secretary. Obviously, the secretary has authority to issued Air Force-wide punitive regulations. Explain to me why that's not controlling.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, we're not suggesting Lieutenant General Green did anything untoward or acted outside of his authority. That's not the issue. The issue is whether this publication, this guidance memorandum, is a punitive general order. It very well could be a lawful order to individuals in his chain of command. It could serve the basis, potentially, for a dereliction of duty charge. The problem, though, is that the requirements for a general order enforceable by Article 92.1 are very specific. And those requirements mandate that essentially that an airman, in looking at the publication that is being enforced under Article 92, would know, hey, this is issued by somebody with authority to do so. So we're simply arguing, Your Honors, that Lieutenant General Green was not doing anything inappropriately, but he did not have the authority to issue a punitive general regulation enforceable by Article 92.
But SECAF does.
SECAF would, yes, Your Honor.
So if he does that on behalf of the Secretary, isn't that just as binding?
It would be, Your Honor, except for the application of AFI 33360, as noted in the previous demonstrative aid, that in an Article 92.1 prosecution, the government cannot supplement a guidance memorandum or some other type of publication through the use of other Air Force documents, through the use of other Air Force publications. And that's exactly what the government's done here. The only way that this guidance memorandum has punitive effect is if you look at both the AF Form 673 and the AFI. And that same AFI says you can't do that for the purposes of a 92.1 prosecution. You might be able to do it for a 92.3, but certainly not for a 92.1. And that's how the government decided to charge this case. In looking at the guidance memorandum itself, Your Honors, there are problems with the opening paragraph, the closing paragraph, and as well as problems with who issued the guidance memorandum, which I've already discussed. Importantly, with the opening paragraph, AFI 33360 states that an opening paragraph must state clearly to what categories of people the punitive provisions apply. Again, this provision was in play, it was applicable at the time of Airman Bagley's court-martial, and I don't know if Your Honors can see that demonstrative aid, but when you go back to chambers, if you would look at the opening paragraph, it should be clear that it does not state who this guidance memorandum applies to. And that's very important because when you look at who it was issued by, when it was issued by the Surgeon General of the Air Force, it's important that it's clear to whom it applies. There's nothing anywhere in that guidance memorandum that would indicate that it applies to all airmen. Another problem with the opening paragraph is that under AFI 33360, it must specify which parts of the publication contain punitive provisions. The opening paragraph does not contain this mandatory language, nor does it contain language in the opening paragraph that failure to observe the prohibitions is a violation of Article 92.
But that, isn't like right down, right in the middle?
It is in the middle, Your Honor, but it's not in the opening paragraph, and we recognize that that might be a hyper-technical application of the rule, but at the same time, AFI 33360 is clear that the opening paragraph must state what provisions are punitive and what are not. And again, that gets back to the notice requirement to our airmen.
But then, wouldn't you look at that middle paragraph, the middle paragraph, and realize that that conduct would be prohibited?
Yes, Your Honor. But and again, the real problem here is some of these problems standing alone might not invalidate this order, might not render it irregular or unlawful, but when taken together, it starts to look like this is not a normal punitive enforceable regulation. And again, the critical factor is whether an airman is on notice. An airman might look at that and say, okay, this paragraph here, it's pretty clear that it's punitive. The middle paragraph, as the Chief Judge has alluded to. But the problem, again, is that opening paragraph does not say to whom it applies.
Are you talking about it applies to active duty, guard, reserve, that kind of language? Is that what's missing?
The AFI gives an example, Your Honor, as to what language should be contained. And it's, let's see. This is from AFI 33-360, paragraph 2.17.1.3. It says, the opening paragraph must state clearly to what categories of people the punitive provisions apply. For instance, to all service members, or to all crew members, or to all persons driving automobiles on base. So that's the type of language that the AFI requires, and it's the language that is conspicuously absent from this guidance memorandum. There are also problems, Your Honors, with the closing paragraph. AFI 33-360 states that a guidance memorandum must conclude with the following language. The directions of this memorandum become void after 180 days have elapsed. And again, the directions of this memorandum. This particular guidance memorandum says the guidance in this memorandum. And that might seem like an insignificant distinction, but when we're talking about whether an airman is on notice as to the punitive nature of a publication, the difference between using language such as direction and guidance could be significant, and it was in this case.
But how is he hurt by this? I mean, if you look at the date of the guidance memorandum and the date of the offense, is that within 180 days?
It was, Your Honor.
So why does that matter?
The problem with that closing paragraph isn't the 180 days. It's that it calls it guidance. It does not call it a direction.
Yeah, but if you go to 44.121 and look at the opening, the first page, which I notice is dated in our book, April 11th, 2011. There must have been one prior to that, right?
There was, yeah.
But it says, this Air Force instruction establishes guidance. And then for the ADAPT program. And then in the next paragraph, talks about what it prohibits. So, I mean, it says it's guidance too, right?
That's true, but it also does go on to say specifically which provisions are punitive. And here we don't have that same language in the opening paragraph. Understanding, of course, that the middle paragraph, the second paragraph, does contain punitive language. But the important takeaway, Your Honors, is that the government is required to follow its own rules, and that is a well-settled principle that's been reaffirmed by the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces in United States versus Williams. And the other thing is, this court has explained in United States versus Hode that when in doubt, any doubts as to the applicability of a punitive regulation must be resolved in favor of the accused. And here we have a guidance memorandum that does not comply with many of the required provisions of AFI 33-360, and the government is coming in here and asking this court to excuse its noncompliance with its own rules. And this court cannot do that pursuant to United States versus Williams.
What about the first paragraph of the memo that says compliance with this memorandum is mandatory? Is your argument that Emma Bagley would have, if he had read this thing, goes, well, this is done by the Surgeon General, he can only command those within the medical ranks, therefore I'm free and clear of having to comply with this?
It's very possible, Your Honor, because if this guidance memorandum had stated, as it was required to do so, this applies to all airmen. This is by, if it was clear that it was by order of the Secretary of the Air Force, such as a designation at the top of the guidance memorandum by order of the Secretary, or even the seal. If the court would note, the seal that is on this guidance memorandum is the generic Department of Defense seal. And so in looking at all those things, an 18-year-old airman might very well be confused as to whether this document, whether this guidance memorandum applies to him or her, especially when it does not comport with all of the trappings of a punitive regulation as set forth by AFI 33-360.
So in order to get this out, the Secretary wants to get out the word that the use of spice is illegal. How would they do that?
The more appropriate way of doing that, Your Honor, is by having someone who is clearly authorized to issue a punitive order, such as a general court-martial convening authority.
Well, Well, but if it's on behalf of the secretary, you can make that order.
Right.
And the 33-360 allows the two-digit to act on his behalf. He signed there the Air Force Forum 363, I think it is. I mean, he's followed all of those regulatory requirements, and he has asserted, or he's basically put down there that I'm doing this only on behalf of the, by the direction of the secretary. Hasn't he complied?
No, he has not, Your Honor, because he did not comply in this case.
Not even with respect to getting the word out from the secretary about SPICE no longer being authorized and being a punitive regulation.
If I'm understanding your question correctly, Your Honor, if this guidance memorandum, if on the face of it, it was clear that it was issued by order of the secretary, such as that designation, I'm not saying it has to be in the opening paragraph, because that is a new requirement that was imposed by the interim change. But if there was the Secretary of the Air Force seal on this document, if there was some kind of indication on the face of the document itself that it was issued by order of the secretary, then we probably would not be here. But as it stands, in looking at the four corners of this document, there is nothing that states that it is by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. Instead, it looks like it is a guidance memorandum that is issued by somebody who clearly does not have the authority to issue this type of punitive regulation. This court should look at United States versus Hode, wherein this court determined that an order or a regulation that purported to prohibit underage drinking, it wasn't necessarily unlawful, it just was not enforceable under Article 92. And that's what we're saying here today, Your Honors, is that General Green, he could issue this type of order to those under his charge, because he does command those individuals. He does not command Airman Bagley. And because he does not command Airman Bagley, it has to be clear on the face of the document that it applied to him. And because it does not, this court should find that the government did not, excuse me, this court should find that the Article 92-1 conviction should not stand.
So the underlying, what you're saying is all of the underlying documents, the 673, don't matter if on the face of it, it's noncompliant.
That's absolutely what we're saying, Your Honor, and that's what AFI 33-360 says, where it says that when a publication requires supplementation to have effect, to have punitive effect, the government cannot turn around and then convict somebody of an Article 92-1 violation.
What's the status of this guidance memo now?
It has been revoked, Your Honor, and my understanding is that now it is individual general court martial commuting authorities have issued their own orders. If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Major Jamie Mendelson, and together with Mr. Gerald Bruce, I represent the government. The guidance memorandum is a lawful general regulation because it was properly published pursuant to the authority of the Secretary of the Air Force. The Air Force Surgeon General published and signed the guidance memorandum following the procedure set forth in AFI 33-360, which is the publication's instruction. In issuing the guidance memorandum in accordance with those procedures, the Surgeon General confirmed that the guidance memorandum was by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. The analysis here is dictated by two important presumptions that case law tells us must be applied. The first is the presumption of lawfulness, which CAF relied on in the Deischer case, in the new case, and which is also set forth within the manual for courts martial. The second is the presumption of regularity. CAF again relied on that presumption in Ayers and Townsend, and this court relied upon it in the Hilton case. Under these two presumptions, it is presumed that the Air Force Surgeon General properly acted within his authority and that he properly carried out his duties and it is presumed that the guidance memorandum as an official document is lawful.
But don't we look at it as an issue de novo?
Yes, Your Honor, the review of the issue of whether it is a lawful general regulation is a de novo review, but case law sets forth these two presumptions that must be applied in conducting that review.
So what if we find that the Surgeon General did not have the authority he purports to have? Don't we have to then rule that the guidance memorandum was unlawful?
No, Your Honor, I actually disagree with that. First of all, the government's argument is that the Surgeon General acted within his authority, but assuming for purposes of your question that this court were to find that the Surgeon General did not act within his authority, if this court were to find that the presumption of regularity or the presumption of lawfulness was rebutted, the government nonetheless has record evidence in the form of the Air Force Form 673 that was signed by the Air Force Surgeon General. And the publication's instruction tells us that when the Surgeon General signs that form, he is confirming that it's by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. So there is additional evidence that is in the record beyond just the guidance memorandum itself. Importantly, it is appellant who bears the burden to come forward with record evidence to rebut these presumptions, and he's failed to meet this burden. Appellant attempts through his briefing to this court and through his oral argument, he attempts to rebut the burden by pointing out what he argues are procedural deficiencies with the guidance memorandum. But none of his arguments actually show any procedural deficiencies. In looking at this question, it's important to start first with Article 92 itself. Article 92 tells us that a lawful general regulation is a regulation that is properly published by the Secretary of the Air Force. The Secretary of the Air Force has issued an instruction that establishes the framework and the procedures in which to properly publish regulations under the Secretary's authority, and that's AFI 33-360.
But with all the problems on that guidance memo, how do we know this is properly published?
Yes, Your Honor, there are no problems with the guidance memorandum. So there are several points that appellant raises in trying to argue that there's a deficiency. First, appellant argues that he argues that the guidance memorandum does not contain the language by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. There is no requirement within the publication's instruction that was in effect at the time that this guidance memorandum was issued requiring that language. That is a new addition to the publication's instruction that came into effect in October of 2011, which was more than a year after this guidance memorandum was issued. The guidance memorandum follows the format of Attachment 4 of the publication's instruction. The publication's instruction specifically sets forth the required format for a guidance memorandum. That's Attachment 4 to the instruction. This guidance memorandum that was issued follows that form. The only variation between the guidance memorandum that was issued and Attachment 4 is a very slight change in the wording in the very last paragraph about the duration or the term of the effect of the guidance memorandum, the 180 days. It is a variation that does not make any substantive change. It is just a variation between the word direction versus the word guidance. And it's the government's position that appellant is reading too much into the word guidance. The publication's instruction calls Air Force instructions guidance. And the publication's instruction also tells us that Air Force instructions are orders by the Secretary of the Air Force. The Air Force instruction also tells us what guidance memorandum are. And guidance memorandum are interim publications or interim regulations that change in AFI on a short-term basis pending the time that it takes to process and distribute a revised AFI, and guidance memorandum are used to address critical issues, which in this case the guidance memorandum is obviously issued to address the critical issue of service members or airmen using intoxicating substances.
The appellant argued that the opening paragraph doesn't contain any language specifying to whom the guidance memorandum applies. Could you address that? I mean, is that a fatal defect in that?
No, Your Honor, it is not a fatal defect. The opening paragraph does clearly state that compliance with the guidance memorandum is mandatory. Also, the AFI itself specifies who the AFI applies to. A guidance memorandum does not exist in a vacuum. A guidance memorandum adds or changes or revises on a short-term interim basis an Air Force instruction. So it is not at all fatal when the opening paragraph of the guidance memorandum says that compliance is mandatory. It says that it revises, it adds a paragraph to AFI 44-121, and AFI 44-121 itself is very clear as to who it applies to.
So how is the airman on notice? I mean, you have to follow a pretty long rabbit trail here. It's like a guidance memo signed by the Surgeon General. All of a sudden, everybody's supposed to be on notice that this applies Air Force-wide, because then they're supposed to go back to 44-121 and follow that down. I mean, I think what Capellan is arguing is this is an issue of notice, and how is an airman on the street to know that guidance memo signed by the Surgeon General, to which he does not work for, would apply to him?
The problem with appellant's argument, Your Honor, is that it's applying a presumption of irregularity instead of a presumption of regularity. We are not to presume that an airman would look at a one-page document which prominently states within the largest paragraph in the body of the document that certain conduct is prohibited, and that a failure to comply with that prohibition is a violation of Article 92. A one-page document that states that compliance is mandatory and that is signed by a lieutenant general. We are not to assume that an airman would look at this and question whether it was valid, that an airman would question whether it was regular. That would be applying a presumption of irregularity. And contrary to appellant's argument, there is no supplementation required in order to give the guidance memorandum meaning and effect. And I'd like to talk about that and direct this court's attention to the Hode case. The Hode case was a case that this court decided in which the appellant in that case was charged with violating an Air Force instruction that related to underage drinking. That Air Force instruction directed installation commanders to promulgate their own drinking age guidance that complied with the state law drinking age guidance. But the instruction also said that MAGCOMS could approve various exceptions to the state drinking age laws. The issue in Hode was that the appellant in that case could not, by looking at the AFI alone, know what was prohibited conduct. An airman, or the appellant in the Hode case, would have to look at the installation commander's guidance to know what is prohibited. That is not the situation that we have in the case at hand. We have a one-page guidance memorandum that within the four corners of that document squarely puts airmen on notice that the use or possession of an intoxicating substance is prohibited, and if you don't comply with that prohibition, then it's a violation of Article 92. So this is, the Hode case tells us, what does it mean if an Air Force instruction or a regulation requires supplementation? Supplementation means that you must look to something else to know what is the required action or the prohibited action. That's not the situation that we have here.
Well, don't you have to look at something else to figure out who it applies to?
No, Your Honor, because the very first paragraph of the guidance memorandum says compliance is mandatory. Compliance is required. And it's an official document that we give a presumption of regularity to. So we're not to assume that somebody is going to read the sentence that compliance is mandatory and then wonder, well, is it mandatory with respect to me?
Well, isn't that why they're here? I mean, because of the Surgeon General's signature at the bottom.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Isn't that why we're here? I mean, their dispute is his signature doesn't apply to the appellant.
But again, Your Honor, the government's position with respect to that is that in order to, if this court were to agree with appellant's argument on that point, then this court would be applying the exact opposite presumption that case law tells us must be applied. This court would be applying a presumption of irregularity instead of the required presumption of regularity. Again, it is the appellant's burden to come forward with record evidence to rebut the presumption. This is a guidance memorandum that the government has gone beyond its burden to show it was properly published pursuant to the authority of the Secretary of the Air Force. The Air Force Form 673 is in the record. That form is signed by the Air Force Surgeon General. The publication's instruction dictates that when an approving official, which the Air Force Surgeon General was the approving official, when an approving official signs an Air Force Form 673, he is confirming that the information therein is by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. Appellant has not come forward with any evidence to rebut the presumption or to allow this court to presume that the Air Force Surgeon General was somehow acting ultra vires, was somehow usurping the authority of the Secretary of the Air Force in signing that Form 673 and confirming that it was by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. And there's one related point that I would like to address at this time, and that was one of the questions from this court to my opposing counsel, which was what is the current status of the guidance memorandum? The current status is that the guidance memorandum no longer exists, but it no longer exists only because AFI 44-121 has been revised to include the paragraph that was added in the guidance memorandum verbatim, which is very persuasive evidence that the Air Force Surgeon General was not acting outside of his authority, that the guidance memorandum was properly used because the exact course that you would expect to see in a guidance memorandum was followed in this case, that the guidance memorandum was in existence until a revision to the Air Force instruction could be made.
You may have answered this a moment, so just let me know, but what do you make of the defense or the appellant's argument that the format used in this, essentially putting the punitive aspect, is buried within the second paragraph versus the requirement under the AFI to put it up front to put people on notice?
Yes, Your Honor, and thank you for bringing that to my attention because I had not addressed that yet. That is of no consequence. This is a one-page guidance memorandum that prominently warns of prohibited conduct and the consequence of engaging in the prohibited conduct. This is not a situation where there's a 300-page AFI and somewhere buried within a 300-page AFI is a punitive provision that an airman wasn't on notice by looking at the first page of the AFI that there was something punitive within those hundreds of pages. The guidance memorandum, when it was in existence, was the very first page on top of the AFI. And so in reading that very first page, the airman was warned of prohibited conduct, put on notice of prohibited conduct, and the consequences of engaging in the prohibited conduct. I would also add that it's actually not clear that Section 2C of the publications instruction applied to guidance memorandum at the time that this guidance memorandum was issued. And the reason I say that's not clear is because there has been a guidance memorandum to AFI 33-360, the publications instruction, that adds a new provision that now states that guidance memorandum that contain punitive provisions must follow Section 2C, the format in the publications instruction, which is the section of the publications instruction that has the language about the opening paragraph. That is added as a new provision. There are new provisions, there are clarifications, and there are deletions. And I think it is significant that the application of Section 2C, the guidance memorandum, is new versus a clarification, which is why I say it's unclear that a guidance memorandum at the time that this one was issued, that there was any requirement that it follow the format with the opening paragraph.
Well, it seems like the government wants it both ways. You want a presumption of regularity that if the Surgeon General signs off on the form, we can assume that it was done on behest of the Secretary of the Air Force, and then it's the government or the appellant's responsibility to prove otherwise. And yet, at least on the face, according to the appellant, the government can't follow its own rules with respect to getting the language correct and the guidance memo to put in the punitive aspect where it's supposed to be. And so you want a presumption of regularity, and yet the government may not be following its own rules. Shouldn't there be some penalty for that?
Well, you know, I respectfully disagree that the government's asking to have it both ways. It's very clearly established in case law that we get the presumption of regularity. This guidance memorandum was properly published pursuant to the procedures of AFI 33-360 that existed at the time that the guidance memorandum was published. If there are no further questions, I'll briefly conclude.
I just want to understand your last comment. So what you're saying is this was correct at the time it was written, but it wouldn't be correct now under the new guidance.
That is correct, Your Honor, because there are new provisions that have been added to the publications instruction that now require the guidance memorandum to state by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. That was not in effect at the time that this guidance memorandum was issued.
What about the first paragraph as to who it applies to?
Your Honor, the government's position is that the guidance memorandum does tell you who it applies to because it says compliance is mandatory. And AFI 44-121, which I think it's critical to note that the guidance memorandum is just, it's a vehicle to add a paragraph to AFI 44-121. And it's adding a punitive paragraph to that AFI. So AFI 44-121 does state who it applies to. The guidance memorandum states that compliance is mandatory. So it's the government's position that there is no ambiguity about who the guidance memorandum applies to. So the crux of the issue here is whether the guidance memorandum is a lawful general regulation. Article 92 tells us that a lawful general regulation is one that is properly published by the Secretary of the Air Force. The Secretary of the Air Force has designated approving officials to publish guidance within their expertise. In this case, the Air Force Surgeon General was the approving official who used the proper procedure, who followed the format and attachment 4 to the publication's instruction to issue the guidance memorandum, and who signed the Air Force Form 673 confirming that the guidance memorandum was by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. Thus, the guidance memorandum was a lawful general regulation because it was properly published pursuant to the authority of the Secretary of the Air Force, and this court should affirm. Thank you.
All right, Kevin.
Chief Judge Orr, may it please the court. I have several points to address on rebuttal. First of all, the government keeps talking about the presumption of regularity. Your Honors, it is a presumption. It is not a conclusion. The government is conflating a presumption with a conclusion. Here, this regulation, this guidance memorandum, is irregular on its face. The presumption, even if it applies, has been rebutted. Importantly, in United States v. Hoad, let me back up, Your Honors. This court can determine that this order is not enforceable under Article 92 without determining that it's irregular on its face. The court can simply rest its decision on the fact that it was not issued by somebody who had authority to issue it. Secondly, the government talks about how the guidance memorandum was incorporated into AFI 44-121, and that is correct, Your Honors, and I misspoke earlier. It is important, though, that the court note that AFI 44-121 contains all of the mandatory language that this guidance memorandum does not. For example, AFI 44-121, the very first page, and this is included in the record, Your Honors, contains a statement at the very top of the publication that says, by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. So right away, we know that this document, this punitive regulation, was issued by order of the Secretary of the Air Force. It was not signed by the Secretary of the Air Force, and we are not standing here today suggesting that the guidance memorandum or the AFI should have been signed by the Secretary. But the AFI itself is very clear that it was issued by the Secretary's order. Similarly, the seal of the Secretary is contained on that AFI. In the first paragraph of the AFI, it states, this instruction applies to all active duty Air Force members and to members of the Air Force Reserve Command and Air National Guard whenever eligible for DOD medical services. So again, it is clear to whom it applies. This guidance memorandum does not contain that language.
But at the time that it was signed, it did not require the seal, did not require the other language that you just referenced, is that correct? I mean, the AFI 33360 didn't require that language in order to make this guidance memorandum effective on AFI 44-121, is that correct?
It is incorrect to a degree. AFI 33360, at the time of Airman Bagley's court-martial and today, required a statement in the opening paragraph about to whom the punitive provisions apply. It also, while it did not require any statement in the opening paragraph that it was issued by order of the Secretary, at the very least it had to be clear in the four corners of the document that it was issued by someone who had authority to do so. And that is a long-standing principle under both the Manual for Courts Martial and binding case law. The government also argues that there is no problems with the guidance memorandum because it complied with Attachment 4 of AFI 33360. Your Honors, Attachment 4 is simply a template. It does not contain any language that states that a guidance memorandum has to comply with Attachment 4, but not with the provisions of the AFI itself. Essentially, the government is asking to have its cake and eat it too. On one hand, the government is saying, this is a guidance memorandum and therefore doesn't need to contain all the required provisions of a punitive publication, but on the other, we're going to enforce it as a punitive regulation. And, Your Honors, the government simply cannot do that. The guidance memorandum here was not issued by anyone who had authority to issue. At least it was not clear that it was issued by someone with authority. The government suggests that it is not supplementing this AFI, or sorry, supplementing the guidance memorandum, and yet that's exactly what the government did at trial, and that's what the government has done here today. They are pointing to AFI 33360, they're pointing to the Air Force Form 673, and saying that both of those documents give this punitive effect. Your Honors, by application of AFI 33360, paragraph 2.17.1.1.1, the government cannot do that in an Article 92.1 prosecution. Because the government has not followed its very own rules, this court should reverse Airman Bagley's conviction. This court should also reverse his conviction because this guidance memorandum was not issued by a general officer in command or by his superior. And for these reasons, this court should reverse Airman Bagley's Article 92.1 conviction. If there are no further questions, this concludes my argument. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank counsel for their arguments. I found them both to be helpful. We will take this court, this case under consideration and render a decision in due course. There being no further business before the court today, this court is adjourned.
All rise.